Welcome to Our Interesting Times with host Timothy Kelly, who interviews today's top alternative and revisionist thinkers.
May you live in interesting times.
My guest this evening is Julia Turiansky. She is a researcher, a filmmaker, and I guess you could say polemicist. Julia, how are you doing this evening?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Very good, very good. Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, it should be fun. Looking forward to it.
Now, your website is bravetheworld.com.
Yeah, you can find everything I've done on there. Mm-hmm. So that's the hub for any way you want to reach me or anything you want to research about me. It's all there.
And you are listener and viewer supported, correct?
Yes. So I have a Patreon page, which has some awesome rewards. I also take direct donations. And however else you want to help out, email me. And I love the community that I'm in, and I love my listeners and viewers. And I've made some amazing friendships and relationships along the way.
Great. Now, recently, of course, I've watched a number of your videos throughout the, I guess, for the past couple of years. I've watched your stuff. And you lace it with a lot of trenchant criticism and analysis and also a good bit of humor, which helps. So I appreciate that. Your recent video, I think your most recent one, is the 50 real differences between men and women. And you did an excellent interview. I think you just told me off call that you just recorded the follow up with Brett Vinat over at the School Sucks podcast. And I direct people to go to that website and listen to that interview. I know you've one posted already to really get into the details of the points you made in the video. But I wanted to discuss you that video and the wider issue of gender politics, feminism, this sort of the cult of equality that we're seen to be living under for the past few decades, and you know some the intrusions that it had on our own lives, the free market, and the problems that it creates both in our own personal lives, our professional lives, and the overall society. So, first of all, what compelled you or motivated you to produce this video, 50 Real Differences Between Men and Women?
I think we live in a world where the politically correct assertion is that men and women are the same. Now, usually when I'm around normal people, everyday people, that's really not the consensus. Anyone who's lived a day of their lives can see some very self-apparent things in reality or in their personal lives that indicate otherwise, that we are not the same. But there is somehow this very big prevalence of scholarly work or political and social thought that guides us against our natural assumptions, which is men and women are different enough for it to make an impact on our lives. So I wanted to do a video that just goes over some of the things that I wouldn't call them basic differences, because I think I picked some of the more interesting ones. I didn't want to be like, oh, women have a vagina and men have a penis. Like, it's not surface like that. I wanted to illustrate differences that actually have an impact in our lives that we don't acknowledge as being biological. also the way that men and women approach conflict, or the way that we resolve conflicts, the way that our empathy works, the way that we literally see and hear. There are some very structural biological differences in the brain and our bodies that give us a different representation of the world. So based on that, if you watch that video, there's so many differences, and I've actually cut it from 100 differences, that even if you don't agree with all of them, or maybe some of them, like the study isn't perfect, fine. But there's so many that it's overwhelmingly apparent that there is an innate difference, and that it creates conflict if it's not acknowledged. And this is where it becomes important. Instead of denying our differences in the name of equality and creating a completely misaligned idea of the world, to the actuality of the world, we should acknowledge that we are different, and you don't need to argue whether one side is better than the other. It's just different. And then we can move forward to see how to better accommodate and how to better communicate between the sexes.
Yes, and of course these differences will manifest themselves or express themselves in many different areas of life. One is the workplace, one is at home, of course, our domestic life. And they were reflected in custom and convention, but obviously those things are open to modification over time. But nevertheless, these differences are so basic and so natural that it's foolish and also destructive to try to use the force of law or ideology to take humanity and cut him so he fits this Procrustean idea, this ideology of equality. Now you have these different, Chris, the men and women are different. Yes, it's a sign of the times that we need to articulate these things and develop an argument when they're obvious, which is, I guess,
silly, Macy.
The Time cover of Time magazine, I think this is back in the 90s, the studies show that boys and girls are different. Oh, you needed a study to produce this? You needed federal money, right. Millions exactly. of dollars? Now, of course, it's still an important field of study, because as we learn about genetics and science, we can find out how profound and how basic and how deep down these differences are, the way the brain develops, things like that, right?
What an interesting fact is that people doing research up until very recently actually excluded women as test subjects for the research in terms of brain studies because of their period, because they're not as consistent, and because the man was a more reliable test subject in terms of hormones and et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's very interesting. So we actually did have a very male-centered point of view in terms of a science, anything to do with the brain. And it was actually women getting into brain research that were like, hey, wait a second, we need to study women too, because we're not exactly the same, guys. We should really look at this. And then along the way, somehow it's been construed as, oh no, saying the men and women are different is sexist. Well, no, it was like the feminist-leaning researchers in the fields were the ones who said, hey, maybe we should study women's brains as well. So it's very interesting, like how things change and how the narrative gets totally perverted.
Now, of course, these differences, again, are very important to acknowledge, because things like, let's talk about how education has developed, or our educational institutions, and these presumptions of sameness between the sexes has created pedagogical methods, educational institutions, which damage both sexes, correct?
Exactly. And the history of this is very interesting, because back in the 1900s, girls actually outscored boys in tests of science and even math. And it was to such a degree and so across the board, without any difference, like between socioeconomic status or region of America or Europe, that the teachers had a saying, went something like this, that the classics are science and math for girls, classics for the boys. And now it's the complete opposite. It's women who tend to go and study arts and English and, you know, women's studies and it's languages. And it's boys who are predominantly going towards, you know, engineering and math and science. And the feminists are screaming sexism. But what happened? Like, why in the 1900s was it the girls that were doing all the math and science and were better at it than boys? What happened? One argument is that they taught these things differently. So back then, they taught math and science in a very, from like a creationist point of view, which gave it, made it like very social. So if you believe in God and you teach math and science as a product of creation, like they still teach the numbers, but it was done in a more personable way. It was done in a way that women could relate to better, mm-hmm. Instead of this kind of clinical, hard, straightforward way that it's done now. Boys are more receptive to that kind of teaching. And the classics were taught in a more scholarly type of fashion. So the teaching methods can actually guide what direction boys and girls go in, you know, the later times in their life and what kind of knowledge they seek.
Yeah, so, I mean, and also just the observation, if you get boys and girls together in a classroom setting, it's going to have a dynamic effect on how they behave. Girls might be more inhibited from talking. Boys might act up and be, well, they might be distracted, especially if they're past the age of 12, right? I mean, so,
I believe in segregation of the sexes when it mm-hmm. comes to teaching. And countless studies hold this up. Like they do very simple things. You take a volleyball team of girls and you put them against other girls and you observe the way that they play the game. They're incredibly aggressive, competitive, spirited, etc. They do a pretty good job. You put the same team against boys and not only do the boys obliterate them, but which is a given in, you know, because boys are a little bit stronger, but it's more about the way that they conduct themselves. Mm-hmm. The girls become reserved. They don't care about competition anymore. They become kind of coy and shy. And then when they get asked, oh, why did the boys beat you? They say something like, oh, the boys cheated. So their whole conduct towards the game changes. They don't have that spirited competition anymore because this kind of quasi-mating ritual begins.
Exactly.
Like, girls will act differently around boys.
It's inevitable. Yeah, it's inevitable.
And the same thing with guys. So you take a bunch of boys and you put them in a music class with girls. They're not going to want to play instruments like the flute because that's a girly instrument. But if you take the girls out of the class, someone has to play the flute that's a male. So there isn't that kind of classification anymore. Someone will play the flute and it's really no big deal.
Yeah, and also,
so, I mean, those are just small examples.
Yeah, I just noticed that my brothers went to single-sex school, Catholic school, and I went to a general public school. There was co-ed, and I've been told I have quite a few nephews who go to a single-sex school, and it's like, you know, there's very little teasing. If it is, it just rubs off people's backs. And no one gets humiliated, and there's no fighting. There's no fighting in school because there's nothing to be proven. It's low key, and everyone can just settle down and worry about school and their pursuits there. Whereas obviously, if you, I think it was, I might have been George Gilder. He wrote Men and Marriage. Back in the 70s, and it was one of the first books to attack feminism. But he said that, you know, when you're sitting in a classroom and there is a teenage boy next to a teenage girl, the only thing he's more interested in that girl next to him is if he were on fire. You know, So it's a huge distraction. I mean, that's, I mean, and it just goes to show how people just forget any understanding of human nature and common sense, all sacrificed on the altar of an ideology, of a program, you know.
Yep.
So
The distraction, people don't like to talk about that, but I even remember when I was young and I was in school and I was in math class, and all I cared about was the boy next to me and what he thought of me. And it was incredibly distracting. I didn't do very well.
Yeah.
And so it works in the reverse as well. But with boys, it's even more augmented because of the levels of testosterone that's rushing through them during puberty.
Yeah.
There's so many examples of this. There's even, like, let's look at it from the perspective of society. What's better for society? Well, the rate of teenage pregnancy goes way down when the sexes are segregated in school. And it's not for the reason that people may assume, oh, because they're not around each other. Actually, when they did the study, the girls in the segregated school had just as many boyfriends than the girls in the co-ed school.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, when a girl is dating a guy in their circle of friends in their school, the pressure for sex and to stay with that boy is incredible. Because if you break up with him, there's a social fallout inside your social group. When you're dating a boy who goes to an all-boys school or who's just outside of your social group because you go to an all-girls school, you can break up with him and never see him again. It's not awkward. You can say no. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is the reason.
Yeah, and that seems to make sense if you really think about it. You're right, yeah. And, again, it gives them a respite or an oasis where they can just not have to worry about who they're dating, and they're focused on school, as opposed to whereas when it's co-educational and you're dating the boy in the school, every day you're seeing this boy. And this is at an age when arguably, you know, dating is all cost and no benefit, really. Well, there's a lot of risk involved. But the schooling, itself, I mean, not only is this the pressure to date, the pressure to go to prom, all these things, the whole high school life that's been created through the public school system, the notion that this is all done through the co-educational system, and the expectations that many teenagers have about how they should be living is based on what they watch on television, the music they listen to, and they never get a break from it. You know, if it's, you know, when they're, you know, if, because high school is their life, you know, at that point, it's so important to them.
Segregate the sexes in school. We can all focus. It's just like, it's, I mean, no one will convince me otherwise at this point. I've read way too many studies supporting it. And thinking back, I sure wish I went to an all-girls school.
Yeah, I mean, give these girls a break. You know, there's so much pressure out there anyway. They got to put up with it at school. You know, and just the very thing.
Gym class. Oh my God. You just got your first period and you're having to go to gym class with a bunch of boys that you like or that you're insecure about. And you're like, it's just the worst. Like, I don't know why they do this to us. Well, I do know why.
Well, you know why. I mean, the whole history of your compulsory.
It wasn't like this before.
Yeah. Well, it's gotten worse. Obviously, it's gotten intensified. I mean, when I went to school back in the 80s, when I was in the 70s, I was in grade school and junior high. I mean, some of the way I behaved, I would have been diagnosed with all types of disorders and put on drugs. I was just being a boy and being stupid. And a lot of that is because I was around girls. You know, you don't know how to act.
And also, this is the other problem, right? So the normal behavior today at school is female behavior. And when boys are boys, they're compared to how you're supposed to be, which is the female behavior, because most early education teachers are women. So they have a bias.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys are, you know, it's not a coincidence that more boys are diagnosed with ADHD.
Okay, there we go. Where were we?
School.
Okay, school, yeah.
Segregation. I think we were wrapping that topic up, probably. Or ADHD,
With ADHD with boys, yeah. I think they're diagnosed like 9 times more than girls or something, yeah.
Right. One thing I go over in my video is how boys and girls draw different things. And it's getting to the point of when a boy draws a violent action scene or something that is misconstrued as violent by the female teacher, there's like a news story about it and the boy suspended and reprimanded. I don't know when having an imagination while being male became a crime, but it is happening in America. And biologically, boys track movement better. They have their iris is literally made to track movement. So they prefer drawing action. They prefer drawing, as opposed to girls who prefer lots of color and drawing nouns, boys like drawing verbs because of the way that their eye is structured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just remember I could always draw well. And to me, I was always drawing ships sinking and soldiers and stuff like that. Again, they're pathologizing male behavior, and attaching disorder to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Then again, I think you made the point that many of the teachers are these women who have no understanding or appreciation of male behavior. And then you have this, this stupid zero tolerance, which says that school officials, teachers don't have to have any sense of judgment or critical thinking. I mean, why would you want to have your kids spend 6-7 hours with people who are excused from any exercise any good judgment or critical thinking? It's ridiculous, you know.
The state of teachers in America is just insane, but that's a whole nother show.
Yeah.
It's crazy because Foucault, he argues that the institution of public schools, prisons, and mental health facilities are all one model with one purpose, and that's to control and punish. And if you believe that, then it's interesting how far we've come, because they began with punishing and trying to control and curb vagabond behavior, drifters, anarchists, people who didn't believe in the status quo, etc. Now, like you said, they're literally making male normal throughout history, universal, documented male behavior, biologically inherited male behavior to be a pathology. Or it's just insane. I don't know what the next step is.
Yeah, it is insane. I mean, I remember in the eighth grade, our yearbook, our English teacher had us pose with guns and do like a fake robbery in the hallway as a joke. And it was in the yearbook with a gun and everything.
Oh my God.
It was a toy gun, but it was no one thought anything about it other than,
right. And this stuff starts just like, you can't throw a snowball. It's escalated so much. Like, I was in school when that was enacted. Like, someone somewhere threw a snowball with ice, some kid lost an eye, and now no one can throw a snowball ever again. Mm-hmm. So now all the boys have to play hopscotch with the girls.
And I think
Katie, what's wrong? Hey buddy. Oh my goodness.
What's and up? you made the point that one day with your father, and even I experienced this as a kid, was how kids used to go out and explore and play, and this is particularly important for boys. Climbing trees, taking risks.
Okay. You know. Wait. I want to do this properly, so give me a minute.
Okay. Back up. Back when you made the point with Brett that boys used to go out and play and explore and take a risk, and boys like to do this. Unfortunately, this does lead to accidents more frequently with boys, but this is the nature of things, and all this is being suppressed all in the name of safety, right?
Yeah. Again, it's trying to curb natural male behavior, and then we get a generation of completely useless people. And if anyone my age has tried to date anyone, and anyone younger has tried to date, my sister has this problem. There are very few actual men left right now. And it's not even their fault. It's the way that they were raised and indoctrinated to be fearful of their own natural urges as men. Mm-hmm. And it makes them passive and, sorry to be vulgar, but it pussifies them.
Yes.
And So many women have this problem today. Like, a guy can't even directly ask a woman out or court her. I have a friend who's actually younger than me. When he went to university, he had this tactic of, as soon as he meets a woman, like within 5 minutes of having a conversation with her and knowing that, you know, she's cool, he will directly ask her out on a date. And without fail, 100% of the time, the woman would say yes. Mostly because they are so flabbergasted that a young male is directly asking them out on a real date instead of, can I have your Facebook, maybe? And you could, you know, hang out sometime, perhaps. Like, this is a problem. Like, this is, like, I mean, it's funny, but if you're a single woman, it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I just remember when I was dating way back when, the approach, again, you know, asking someone out, and, you know, if she didn't find you interesting or was seeing somebody else, okay, fine. And you learn not to fear rejection because you have to take some sort of risk, right? But as long as you do it in a respectful manner, you know, you learn, you know, that sort of thing. It's just one of those things where, again, they have not – a lot of these boys are growing up in broken families, absentee fathers or fathers that were never there, and they don't have any proper male role models, and nor is it being promoted with television or entertainment, the popular culture. That coupled with the fact that, again, pathologized male behavior.
Kids grow up and learn how to do things by mimicry, straight up. Like – If you put a kid in a house with a chimpanzee, they will mimic the chimpanzee. Mm-hmm. And they have done that, and that's what happens. So if there's no one, if the boy has no one to mimic in terms of male behavior in the household, I think that has a lasting effect.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, I'm not going to say every single household with only a mom produces these men, because there's other factors. You can have an uncle or her, like, a grandfather, or there could be a different kind of patriarch acting upon the child. But if there is nothing like that to replace the father figure, I really think that the child will lack socialization in terms of becoming a man. And there is this kind of old knowledge where when a boy reaches a certain age, he needs to be, you know, plucked from the mother and given to the father for training.
Yeah.
And we don't do that anymore. Most hunter-gatherer cultures, or more old-fashioned cultures around the world, they have a coming-of-age ceremony for both men and women. And mm-hmm. it's a big ordeal, and it's right when you hit puberty or right before puberty. And being a man is something of a point in those societies. Mm-hmm. And today, we just are so lacking of that.
Well, again, because you're living in a society that's post-industrial. This generation, the millennials, are deracinated. They have no sense of their ancestry or their culture. In fact, they've kind of, well, you know, there was a time when America was very men do feel guilty about it, and that's been a long process. That's middle part of the 20th century with the, you know, with urban renewal, destruction of the ethnic neighborhoods in the name of integration, racial integration. But there was a time when you identified, you know, you were a member of the Polish community, a member of the Italian community, the Irish community, and you had a history there. And you mentioned the importance of uncles and grandfathers, and that, of course, that requires a, you know, extended family. And now we live in such an atomized, mobile society that people no longer have the benefit of an extended family, or most don't. You know, they live in an atomized, you know, you know, they're lucky if there's a father.
And I think that's good. Right, and that's a very important point, because this is where this whole thing of once you have a child, you're enslaved to your child, or it's your whole life, and blah, 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 and women are superheroes, and they have to do everything, and, like, you know that whole narrative?
Yeah.
Like, that narrative didn't exist before. Like, having a kid was something all women did, and it wasn't a big deal. Why? Because your parents took care of your kid while you worked.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. While you were young and able-bodied, you produced kids and you plowed the land. While your parents, who are now old, took care of your kids. Mm-hmm. And it was a cycle. So you had this extended family, and not just your parents, your younger brothers, your older brothers and sisters. Today, everyone is so liberated and independent, and everyone lives in a tiny, you know, apartment in the city away from each other or in completely different countries because we are so mobile. And a woman has a child, and she's, like, literally stuck at home with that child with no help whatsoever. And if she wants help, she needs to give her kid up to a stranger. And if she wants to still work, she needs to give her kid up to a stranger and then pay half her money to that stranger. It enslaves women in that regard, but it's not supposed to be that way. When a woman has a child, she's supposed to still have a reasonable amount of freedom and independence because of the extended family.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's been totally eradicated.
That's almost like a process where they went about creating the nuclear family, which was artificial. And then they, after the Second World War, they kind of created this cult of materialism here in the United States. And so they wrote people in with this materialism, robbed them of their ethnicity, of their sort of their religious or ethnic background, and created kind of this bland white middle class in here in the United States. And then in that fertile ground, you could develop things like feminism, because people had the free time to worry about, you know, living in their comfortable concentration camp, as it was referred to. You know, but again,
so what I like to say, I have a video on, it's called How Feminism Betrayed Women. And at the end I go, you know, women were liberated from their husbands and enslaved by the state. Mm-hmm. So, and basically the point being, okay, you got your liberation. What do you do now? You work 12-hour days just like men and then come home stressed out and you never see your kids?
Yes.
Wow. Great. Brave new world.
Well, this is where it gets the real sinister, because none of this was just accidental or product of sort of a linear process. This was a social engineering scheme that was hatched to one thing is to women, when they were not employed outside the home earning a wage, although they were working and there was value, social value, to what they were doing at home, because managing a household is necessary. But it wasn't taxable. And so
right.
You get
and
them out of
unlike they're taught, men respected that. Like, men did respect that. Being the matriarch, it was a matriarchy when you got home.
Yeah.
I don't know about the outside world, but when you got home, it was a matriarchy. Your wife did all the stuff, and you listened to her, and it was her home, and she organized everything, and she raised the children, and et cetera. And if you look, again, if you look at hunter-gatherers, it's still like that. And it's not easy work. Women are sitting around grinding roots and trying to make enough food for the family and doing very hard, back-breaking labor in fields. And that's still part of taking care of this home. And it doesn't, like, they work. I don't understand where this myth came from that women stayed at home and did nothing, and then because we weren't allowed to do anything. That's not true. Women worked. It was just a different kind of work.
That's true. And even before women had the vote here in the United States, campaign posters were geared towards women because women influenced how their men voted. So this cult of the vote.
Definitely.
I'm not a big fan of democracy in general.
It was
right?
Like a household decision.
Yeah, it was a household decision. There's sort of a corporate representation there, which I kind of prefer, I guess, because I think too many people vote anyway. But again, I'm not a big fan of democracy, mass politics. That's a whole other discussion. But it just goes to show sort of the subtle power that women held, because they held if you just look at the laws what the laws read, that's a very bare representation of society. You don't get a real true read of society there, because in reality is that in order for a man to court a woman and to earn her respect and her love, he's going to have to treat her in a certain way and show her some respect. And these things, you just can't look at what the law said. You have to look at how people lived. You have to get what the real social life was in these things. A good example is, just because men could vote doesn't mean that they had power. And of course, since we do live – realistically, we do live in an oligarchy, the vote is highly overrated anyway. But again, what you're saying is here is the notion.
I have a fun fact about the suffrage movement and women's right to vote. So Interestingly, this narrative is never presented in schools or history, but there was a whole outcry of women before they got the right to vote criticizing the suffragettes and saying that giving women the right to vote is going to break up households because women are supposed to come to a decision with their husband about who to vote for. Mm-hmm. And if women go out and make their vote instead of making the decision within the household as a unit, that will create conflict and will break up households. Very interesting.
Oh, well. I think they've been vindicated. You know, but
yeah.
And that's that. Of course, that was that was part of the reason for feminism, why feminism was promoted by the establishment, by the CIA, no less. Gloria Steinem worked for the CIA.
Right. And you look at the women that were at the head of it, they were all like old 45-year-olds who never had a family or kids. Mm-hmm. They had a completely different agenda and point of view than the general population of women who were family women.
Yep.
That's right. And also, with going back to what I said about, you know, the household makes a decision together and, you know, they back each other up and then the man goes and actually performs the action, shows that there was implied respect for your wife's opinion when it came to these things.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And, well, are you familiar with Aaron Russo?
Yeah.
Yeah, his discussion, he had an interview with, I think Alex Jones conducted the interview, but he claimed that he had a discussion with Nicholas Rockefeller, I think in the year 2000, and they discussed a whole lot of things. One thing was Nicholas Rockefeller told him about the events of the upcoming year, like 9/11. But one thing they did talk about was feminism. And are you familiar with that interview?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. So
that's the one I'm more familiar with, the feminism one than the 9/11 one.
Yeah. Well, she, yeah, but
it was all in an interview.
Yeah. So I don't, yeah. So, you know, how he says, you know, he asked him, hey, what was feminism all about? And of course, you know, he gave Aaron Russo offers the pedestrian explanations about women's liberation and equality, blah, blah, blah. And Nick Rockefeller goes, you're an idiot. It's about getting women out of the home, into the work, so we could tax them, weaken the family, so the kids go into daycare, spend longer time in school, so they can be institutionalized and torn away from the family, atomized, and be subjected to all the psychological warfare or social engineering that the loving state has to offer. You know, so you know, here we are. You know.
Yep. Look, you know, I think more and more people are acknowledging that, if not on a subconscious level. I mean, we're seeing all these alternative schools come around, and we're seeing kind of a resurgence of respecting the stay-at-home mom, or at least a conversation about it as a reaction to, like, the psychofeminists that are allowed online.
Of course,
so
yeah.
Just to give it, I mean, because it's, like, such a dreadful thing to think about. Like, sometimes I just feel I'm in a black hole and you can't get out. But when you do kind of pay attention to the positives and the people are reacting to these things, people are not asleep. And I realized this to some extent after I put my video out. And to be honest, I was expecting more of a negative reaction, but it was the most positively accepted video or positively received video I've ever put out. And it just shows that, yeah, this kind of knowledge is innate. Like we know this, we appreciate this. And only incredibly people basked in self-denial and obsessed with reformatting reality are the ones who are going to argue against these very obvious points. Doesn't that have to be proven by science?
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, you have to articulate an argument against the obvious, and that says a lot. Okay. now, of course, we're talking about some of these different, you know, of course, these differences between men and women, how they, you know, they're how. We ignore them at our peril, and there is a proper manifest, you know, I guess expression in custom and culture and convention of these differences, you know, be it expectations in relationships, or you know, something as basic as separate bathrooms, which is now under assault, other insanity. There are other things. You know, some of the rallying cries for feminism is like, well, say. Sexual, you know, sex discrimination, pay, this so-called pay gap, And this, the overall civil rights, you know, anti-discrimination laws that have come up, which seek to more or less impose equality across the board, when all around you you see inequality and differences in behavior, differences in workforce participation, differences in, you know, just in priorities, right? I mean, men and women have different priorities. Just as even between ethnic groups, different ethnic groups are going to participate in the economy differently. And it's not always because you have an evil white boss, not willing to hire somebody. It's these differences are real, and they're going to be expressed.
Right. Again, it's a denial of human nature and self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
No boss in their right mind is going to deny a woman or a black guy a job based on their sexism or racism if the person is qualified enough to make the person money.
Of course, yeah. That's why
people choose money every time.
Yeah. That's why historically, yeah, they favor green. That's the color they favor. Now, historically, it's those industries. If you look at discrimination, those industries that were most far removed from the free market that could afford to indulge, their racial attitudes. You know, like good example of was education. Public education was segregated. Municipal busing. These things were segregated, and quite often, it was the local laws that made private companies, discriminate. You know, like the white only counter, down there in the South. The Jim Crow these were laws that had to be imposed on the free market.
Oh yeah.
You know,
the public sector is always more racist and sexist. The private sector actually helped create equality in the workforce. Way of actually allowing women to participate, because after World War II, a lot of women wanted to go and work,
mm-hmm.
and the men came back, but the companies were like, oh, but these women are willing to work for less. So they gave the women jobs over the men because they could pay them less,
mm-hmm.
which allowed women to enter the workforce and work their way up and prove that women are capable too. That was the free market and human greed. And it actually, depending how you want to argue it, allowed women to, you know, gain their liberation in terms of being citizens of the world and working alongside men. I would, of course, argue that we didn't benefit that much from that. But from a feminist kind of perspective,
yeah.
It was the free market that helped.
And again, it's a question of priorities and what you want. I'd agree with you. I would say that ultimately, I mean, obviously, if you're going to have children, someone's going to have to raise those children, and you have both people working, and it's the kids going to be put in some sort of institutionalized daycare, and that's a problem. But I know your point. The good example is the pay gap myth, whereas you cannot just say men make more than women because the free market is biased towards men. Men and women participate differently in the workforce. Women like to take more time off, more vacation. They choose jobs that are less risky, perhaps. And so you're comparing two very different groups and what their priorities are. And who's to say making more money is preferable to doing something else, right? I mean,
right. Women go for social jobs that are more face-to-face human quality. Oh my goodness, buddy. Okay, one second. Yeah. I'll be right back.
Sure, no problem. Okay, so you were saying about women in work and their approach to it.
Right. So women tend to go for the more social jobs, the more face-to-face, and often those pay less. Men go for the jobs that are harder, to be honest. A lot of the jobs in the lower classes that pay more are incredibly dangerous and risky and isolating.
Mm-hmm.
And in the upper classes, they're high stress, incredibly time consuming, and aggressive in nature. Women tend to go towards things that are a little bit lower on the stress level. So the interesting thing is, you can't make a comparison between men and women in terms of how much they earn, because you have to factor in that women who have kids, they lose out on a lot of years of acquiring the skill set that it requires for someone to have a higher paying job. That's just because, you know, 9 months of gestation and your little baby, usually in the community for a year at least. And that takes, you know, in your prime years, in your mid-20s, mid to late 20s, that is when you're like working your ass off to get ahead in your career. Men usually do not have that that pause in their career development. So what you do is you isolate. You take men who never married and have you take men who never married or had kids, and you take women who never married or had kids, and you compare their earnings. And what's interesting is the women in those cases make more money.
Yes, yes. And on average, when a man gets married, his income goes up because he has to go up. When women get married, their income drops because now they have other responsibilities that aren't, you know, that they don't get paid for in money, in cash. Their salary drops because they're doing other things. Yeah. And
I love that stat, that married men with kids make way more money than single men.
Yeah.
Because of the motivational factor, for sure.
Exactly. You got the fire under their ass.
Going back to human nature, it's your it's your provider instinct.
And they never talk about the death gap, meaning that many more men die at work than women, you know.
Yeah, because like I said, the dangerous job.
Yeah. You know, so
also, it doesn't really make sense for a bunch of women to go and be miners. Like,
no.
I wouldn't hire women to mine my mine. They're just not that strong.
And here's the more sinister angle. I think one of the things when you're throwing women out to the workforce isn't just to tax them, to farm them, more or less, to harvest their energy. The state or the corporations that control the state, like the Rockefellers, things like that. But it's also when they go to work, obviously if they're at work, their fertility is going to drop because of anxiety, and also because they're no longer – they can't divide the two. You can't do it all because you only have so much time. You only have so much energy. And ultimately, these things I think are kind of a part of a depopulation scheme. Which also the elite.
You can bring in like the use of hormonal contraceptives into that, and all the estrogen getting peed out by women into the water, and that's reducing male fertility. And in the long run, it reduces female fertility because too much estrogen gets stored up in your fat cells, and then you become infertile because you can't process it.
It's really sinister.
I actually have a whole website called. Yeah, I have a whole website called goingoffthepill.org. So if you're a woman listening to this and you've had issues with hormonal contraceptives and you need help, you can go on that website. It's a good resource.
Yeah.
Because it's detrimental, and it's sold as this like female liberation. But how can you liberate females by hijacking their bodies with artificial hormones?
It's not
liberating them.
And it also pathologizes fertility, right? I mean,
exactly.
This gift that women are given.
I had a girl write on my Facebook page how like, oh, I, you know, it sucks because women are incentivized to have kids, and like, why can't I have better insurance? I can't have good insurance because my uterus wasn't hijacked by a baby. And I'm like, FYI, your uterus, by definition, cannot be hijacked by something that it's made to grow.
Yes.
So it's this, like, this language is so prevalent.
Well, again, it's the notion, again, a lot of it is the complete neglect of personal responsibility and behavior, or the separation from sex from babies, right? Where the notion that people no longer associate it with procreation, when it used to be kind of both. It was like, you know, and this is why people courted each other and why women were coy and protective of themselves, because they knew, you know, if they were going to mate with a male, they want that person to be responsible and these things. Well, sexual liberation, sexual freedom. Well, there's no such thing as sexual freedom because actions have consequences. That you're just shifting the cost to somebody else, whether it's, you know, the state.
Youngins listening to this, the only reason sex feels good is because it was evolutionarily preferable to do that so that you pass on your genes more steadily.
Yeah.
In fact, even the female orgasm increases the chance of pregnancy because the muscle contraction sucks up the sperm into the uterus.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason we have sex is to have babies. Everything else is an evolutionary byproduct to increase the chance of that sex happening, to increase the chance of babies,
mm-hmm.
to create genetic, genetic future for yourself. And you can't disassociate that. The pleasure is a byproduct of evolution, just to pass on genes. Sorry, end of story.
Well, yeah, and of course, when babies create, there's a lot of time has to be invested in them, a lot of energy. And so we create conventions and customs to ensure that. Things like the marriage bond, family. And these things ensured.
Yeah, you're going to love my next videos. It's about the mating strategies of males and females.
Mm-hmm.
And I go over all the mating strategies that we have. Totally fascinating.
Yeah, and this goes to the sort of the assertiveness, aggressiveness of male, which is complemented by the coyness of females. And obviously, it's the female which it really has the trump card. And men are very sexually vulnerable. The sexual revolution turned that around because it more or less told women to more or less give up what they the trump card they had, at least their leverage in the deal is, you know.
Right. Isn't it interesting that feminism never talks about how females are the more valuable sex? We are biologically more valuable than men.
Yeah, well, because
we are limited to the amount of babies we can have.
Mm-hmm.
We don't produce millions of eggs every day, and we can't have a baby every day. A man can. So you need the female. You need them.
Well, good example of that would be
to preserve them, take care of them.
Yeah, but your home country of Russia. All the men that died in World War II, it would have been much more damaging to the overall population if women had suffered as often as men had.
And they shot themselves in the foot because the Soviet Union was the first real egalitarian state because they let their women and encouraged them to fight in the war.
Mm-hmm.
We had female snipers. We had women fighting even on the lines alongside with men. We had female pilots. Women were dying in that war, which was a bad mistake, very bad mistake. Imagine if America conscripted the women and the men. Like, America had a huge labor problem during the war and post the war.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if they sent the women to die as well. It would have taken generations to repopulate to any significant degree.
Yes. Yes. Now, what we're talking about is, again, these things are just so basic and so common sense, yet we're forced to defend them and come up with these arguments. But when it comes down to, I think there was you might like this quote here about femininity and masculinity. It goes, unlike femininity, relaxed masculinity is at bottom empty, a limp nullity. While the female body is full of internal potentiality, the male is internally barren. Manhood at the most basic level can be validated and expressed only in action. That was George Gilder.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just strip it down. It's just basic fact.
Mm-hmm. And
this is the biggest lie, like you mentioned, like sexual liberation of women. Yes, I support it in terms of women should be able to feel okay about their bodies and orgasm and feel okay being sexual beings. But maybe with thin, loving relationships instead of on the streets with their clothes off, screaming about equality. We have way more to lose when pregnancy occurs. So having rampant sex with everyone is a really bad idea. And we have generations of evolutionary sexual programming in her genes to send us signals that we should not be doing that. There are promiscuous mating strategies, but they were never as prevalent as they are today. And I'll talk about some of the factors that make them more prevalent in the videos I mentioned. So
when is this video coming?
Watch those if you're listening.
Yeah, when is it coming out?
I filmed them today, so in a few weeks. at the end of the month, let's say, to be safe. Mm-hmm.
And of course, again, a lot of this was the sexual revolution in the 1960s. This was promoted by things like Playboy magazine. At the same time, I think we mentioned off call, Alfred Kinsey and some of his studies. Methodology was very dubious. And this promoted this idea of one thing is it promoted pedophilia, which
I know Hustler had a recurring comic strip called Chester the Molester,
yes,
where it made fun of a man trying to have sex with a little girl. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that it was based on the real life antics of a father and a daughter, the father being the creator of the comic strip, and he actually was personifying the character of the little girl as his actual daughter, who he was actually molesting.
Yeah.
And then making it public, the comic strip. It's totally insane. These were the kind of people that were employed here.
Yep.
And I can't even imagine a magazine having a comic strip that's making fun of molesting a child. It's totally insane.
Well, what they do is, and it's being done in more subtle ways as well. It's just with characters, pop stars. Yeah, I mean, we have Britney Spears, Britney Spears a few years ago with the, it's more like 15 years ago now, but her dancing around in a little mini skirt, a little plaid schoolgirl outfit, and Hit Me Baby One More Time.
The midriff.
Yeah, these things. You also have, the tartification of girls' fashion, little girls' fashion, with where it's hard to find outfits are now become more sexualized for younger and younger girls. I guess what they're trying to do is if they can subtly sexualize children with pop music, popular culture, television. I think the Disney Channel is a chief culprit in this stuff. They can now deny what was once called the latency period with children. And they say, well, children are sexual, so it's okay now, And so, these are this stuff is being rolled out gradually, but that's society moves slowly and people adjust to these things. I mean, look what people, tolerate now are in popular culture and broadcasting and television and movies. Well, if just 30, 40 years ago would never be tolerated, but they just gradually accept it, so.
People can get used to all kinds of abuse. It's crazy. We are such adaptive type beings.
So, Julia, I've said I will have you for about an hour. I think we're coming up on that, aren't we? Yeah, we're over past an hour, and your little one is getting antsy, so. Anything else you want to say? Any other observation or anything?
Oh man, we could talk forever, but yeah, let's finish up, say our goodbyes, and then see. We could do a show in the future when I have a proper babysitter. Maybe I think it'd be interesting to do a show after my next two videos.
Yeah, yeah.
It really touches some of the points you've made, and we can go deeper into it.
Yeah, yeah, just kind of, this is kind of a survey intro stuff, and really enjoy your work and your observations. It's a unique look at these things because, one thing is your generation. I think I got a few decades on you at least, and so I find your observations particularly interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah. Insightful and
congrats on my six little ones. That's amazing.
Yes, well, it's more. I gotta credit my wife more than me, so I had the easy part. So, six of them, and they're all homeschooled. So, well, I mean, the ones that are old.
Oh wow, yeah,
the ones that are old enough.
I hope to do that.
So,
I find the more what I've been told, the more you have, the less work it is. Cause they just
It's economies of scale. Right.
So. Yes. So I'm hoping. Yeah, my boyfriend and I, we want to do that.
So,
when we first met, he said 7 kids, right? I'm like, yep. So we started.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. Can
literally
you
on our first date, and then we started a few months later.
So you want 7?
When you know, you know. Oh, so right now I'm still trying to recover from having this one. So once I forget a little bit, then I'll get back to saying yes.
Did you have him at the hospital?
Yeah, I did, because I had to have a C-section. I have really weird pathology. Yeah, I have two uterus, and he was breech.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I had a C-section because his cord was wrapped around his neck and stuff. So.
Oh, okay. Well, okay.
Yeah, so, and in that case, it was the right call. Yeah, and I denied. Like, I had to, like, put up a fight with all the injections and stuff, and they came and tried to brainwash me about it. And they said, like, all this stupid stuff. Like, I denied the right day, and they're like, they're giving me this lecture. I'm like, yeah, but I know that in Denmark they do oral treatments for vitamin K, so I prefer to do that. They're like, no, that doesn't work. I'm like, what? Yeah, it does. They've had zero deaths. Like, no, it doesn't work, but we'll administer it anyways, just in case. I'm like, so it doesn't work, but you'll still do it just in case. You just contradicted yourself. It doesn't work, then it doesn't work. Don't give it to me, right? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's why one of the reasons.
They push it.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why my wife, our last child, we had at home with a midwife. No.
That's awesome.
So, and to get out of that whole scheme, that whole control system that there, it's that's a whole other can of worms. Cool. I don't want to keep you anymore.
You guys have, like, I know in some states you can't even deny some of the injections. So
yeah, it's insane.
Crazy, right?
And if you do cursory research, listen, I'll let you go. Listen, I want to thank you. Let you salvage a little bit left for your Friday night and have fun with your little one there. And yeah, I'll be in touch when this video comes out, and I'll give me time to digest it and watch it, and I'll send you an email and we'll set something up again. So it'll be great.
Sure. Feel free to edit it and make it shorter. I won't be offended or anything like that. Make your calls. And yeah, let's do another show in the future. This was really nice.
Thank you, and good night. Enjoy the weekend.